Hello everyone and welcome to another Okrafoot 24 podcast. I'm Adam from Okrafoot 24 and a big thank you to Stell at Shoot the Defence for giving us the platform to get the message about Ukrainian football out to the wide world. We're really thankful for all the viewers that have been listening over the last couple of months. And I'm really happy to welcome back Andrew, who's whizzed back from Madrid today, from Zorya Lansk. Andrew, good evening. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm fine. Busy weekend, but I'm sure we've got a lot to discuss, so looking forward to it.
And the King of North Kiev, Andrei, is here. Oblon have had a quiet start to the league, but I hope you've been enjoying the national team instead.
Evening, guys. Well, I cannot say I was enjoying it. It's quite painful, but still, plenty to talk about.
And I'm really happy tonight to welcome Peter from Donetsk Way. Peter, it's really good to have you here today.
Hi, thanks. It's wonderful to be on. Looking forward to it. And like it's been mentioned, there's plenty to discuss. So let's get cracking, I suppose.
Definitely. And it all started, it feels like a lifetime ago now, last week with the game over in Lviv against Switzerland. The Nations League got up and running with a home game against Switzerland out there. And Peter, what was your take on the game? How did you think it went?
So first of all, obviously, it's fantastic to start with a win and continue the view and the sequence that lasted. That was a tricky game itself. Although obviously we got the 3 points and the victory, I wasn't actually that impressed. Switzerland dominated the possession. We showed some of the problems that Spain took advantage with in terms of we tried playing out of the back and often got caught out. Luckily, Switzerland weren't as clinical as the Spanish showed later on. And we created chances, and luckily we managed to take some of them. Obviously, nice finish from Yarmolenko after Tim Cheek's nice work on the flank, and followed by that wonder strike from Zinchenko, who I must admit at the time, I don't think he meant it, but he's come out and he's insisted that he did, so we let him have that one. But like I said, I think it was a pretty average performance, but we got the 3 points needed to win. You could almost see the step-up in class of the Swiss, although they were missing a few players. It was nice to see a couple of debuts as well from Tim Cheek and Mikhailichenko, and they impressed in that game in particular. And the rest of it, maybe Konoplyanko and Juni Marais failed to impress in particular, and they had little impact on the game, in my opinion. But Shevchenko managed to make the change, bring Yaremchuk on, and in the second half, we had quite an improvement to get us ahead. And then, we managed to hold on in the end.
Definitely. What did you make of the selection on last week? Were you happy with the new boys getting the chance?
Yeah, myself, yes. It was nice to see new faces. Obviously, Shevchenko likes it. I think he's now on 25 debutants in his time as head coach of the national team. Although that said, you know, it was nice to see Tim Cheek and Mikhailichenko in there, but some of the older faces, maybe we could have had some of the youngers. It's been disappointing that we've not seen Supraka, and he's persisting with Konoplyanka despite him not even making a real impact for Shakhtar as well. So that's a bit more reputational than deserved on form, in my opinion. But the trio in midfield are picking themselves, really. As other centre backs and goalkeeper, I know some of the people.
Sorry there, Peter, you went a bit quiet. Could you just repeat the last thing you said?
Yeah, just mentioning about the goalkeeper year in 2019, but it's maybe distribution was, and decision-making with the ball in particular was a bit lacking in these two games. So if Ukraine are playing out from the back in future, it's something worth thinking about a bit more.
Yeah, definitely. Andrei, do you agree there with Peter's summary of the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's quite fair to say that we won the match against Switzerland with less possession and less probably experienced players. But yet again, although Switzerland created more chances, they didn't convert them into goals. And it's kind of played a role in the next match, which we're going to discuss.
Sorry there, we're having some problems, a little few problems with the recording. Andre, could you just repeat the last little bit you said there? I think he's gone for a second. Andrew, I hope you can hear me. Anyway, anything you'd like to follow up with on the game out in Lviv? Microphone's turned off, Andrew.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Yeah. So, but essentially, it was a good start. I'd say we rode our luck a bit for certain. As in, Ukraine let off by a few chances with Pyatov giving away quite a few passes just in his own half, which obviously looked difficult to defend against. And because Switzerland, you know, they were missing a few players and they just lacked that finishing touch in the final third, they were unable to convert those chances. And if anything, it should have probably been a warning for Shevchenko and his coaching staff, who have implemented this sort of quite a new playing style in this past week that really wants the centre-backs to be being passed the ball out by Pyatov and then back to him and then him starting all the moves. And I mean, that's fine and all, but when you're getting played against quite a high press, which Switzerland were and then Spain did eventually as well, it's really difficult. And Pyatov, I don't think, is very good at decision-making anyway. He's a good shot stopper. He's a good keeper. But I mean, ultimately, quick thinking, I don't think, is too much in his repertoire. And hence, we probably got let off in the Ukraine-Switzerland game. And then that sort of all came to a head in against Spain.
So it certainly did, sadly, as we're about to find out. And of course, you were very in the fortunate or unfortunate position of being one of the few lucky people inside the stadium. Being able to attend the press conferences, you had a good inside knowledge of what happened last night. We're recording this on Monday, I should add, to people listening in. So what actually, from where your vantage point, which was a lot more privileged than everyone else's, where do you think it all went wrong last night?
Well, I mean, from front for obviously the penalty awarded inside 2 minutes sort of threw, I think, Ukraine's whole game plan out the window. It sort of made sort of a quick little lapse in concentration from Kriv.
So, yeah, and that was where it all kind of came to a head last night in Madrid. We're recording this on Monday for people listening. Andrew, you had a great vantage point, very privileged position, or unfortunate position, as it might be, compared to us inside the stadium. Where do you think it all went wrong last night for the national team?
Yeah, so watching from the stadium, just a first sort of, you know, little pointer, it's very strange watching it live, especially in these COVID times. Like, obviously, even on via TV, when you've got the commentators speaking over it, you don't quite understand how silent it is in the background when the players are playing. It's literally just little shouts from the players, and that's about it, and maybe a bit from the manager. But it's surreal, if anything. But yeah, so basically, I think it all went wrong from the very outset. The tactical setup from Shevchenko was probably the wrong one. Big blow before kickoff, of course, that Stepanenko was injured on match day. Apparently some sort of knee injury. Not 100% sure the full extent of that, but he wasn't able to play. And obviously, he's sort of the understated player in Ukraine's squad, where you really don't notice that he's not there until he's actually gone. And he sort of helps link up that midfield triangle of himself, Malinovsky and Zinchenko, and they're able to control and dictate the pace of play, essentially. However, without that, they had Haratin debuting, which I think could have been okay, but he's just not used to probably playing the high quality of opposition, maybe in Europe or elsewhere, that maybe Sidorchuk, who's recently had quite a good start to the season, could have had more experience in that sort of role. However, I feel that the game was probably more lost defensively. The two fullbacks who had, you know, okay games on last Thursday against Switzerland just weren't really up to the challenge of the wings from Spain, who really tore them apart. Basically, Timsik had an absolutely awful time against Ansu Fati, who, well, I was watching highlights again of just Fati's play, and he was literally turning Timsik inside out. Similarly, Krivtsov probably had one of his poorer games for Zbirna. He gave away the penalty. Ramos, he let him in to score that header that he lost against him. And just in general, they just sort of lacked a sort of ability for plan B and sort of being able to counter the high press that Spain played that Ukraine were just unable to do. As some people say, this might be a sort of a second game syndrome that Shevchenko's sides have faced every time they play these sort of qualifiers, where the first game they play relatively well, get a positive result, and then the second game, they're sort of either burnt out or just unable to get that same momentum going that they get in the first game. They may either end up winning or drawing in that second game. But if anything, it all came to a head yesterday where they faced some top quality opposition in attack as well as defence, and were completely dominated by it. A learning curve for sure. And hopefully it sort of bodes well in preparation for future, for the future of the Nations League campaign and the Euros next year.
Fantastic, Peter. Did you agree there with Andrew's summary? What was your take on it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so the penalty in the first minute was a real killer blow, and then we just failed to recover and failed to adapt. Really, I felt after that it was obvious. It wasn't working. The playing out from the back, pretty much 80% of the time, it was coming straight back, and Spain were creating more chances. And then, like Andrew just said, there's just a lack of a plan B. Just from comments online during the game, just a lot of people saying stop playing out of the back and maybe try a different system, a different philosophy. But Shevchenko stuck with it, and it'll be really interesting to see if that's a sign of things to come. And whereas Shevchenko's going to try and insist on this playing out from the back, despite obviously not working against a team from the highest level, or if he's looked at it and thought, right, that's not going to work, so now I need to adapt again. It's a good time for it to happen. It's better for it to happen now than in the Euros. So, yeah, it's like I said, just learning. Regarding the second game syndrome as well, announcement of the friendlies against Poland and France are a bit bewildering for them to happen before Nations League games. Just to add to that theory of burnout, interesting that we're adding another fixture in there potentially. But it's a real test now for Shevchenko. He's had a good year or so. So it'd be a real chance for him to show what his true mettle is ahead of the games in October.
Definitely. Andre, did you buy Shevchenko's sort of It was almost the excuse that he gave Andrew in the press conference afterwards of this second game syndrome, the players being burnt out. Did you agree with it?
Yeah, I would say that we needed that game because it doesn't show our level. I wouldn't agree that it's the top-notch game that Ukraine can play. I mean, we know they can do better, and they know they can do better. With the right players, if Shevchenko gets rid of the veterans on as wingers, if he tries to play with wingbacks, it's the only thing I see about this lineup is try to play with wingbacks, five defenders, and have some kind of false nine. And for sure, we need to replace the keeper. And that's pretty much it. That's what this match showed, and that's why we need it. It's so bad. It's still a good situation for us in the group because we're second. Somehow Germany and Switzerland drew yesterday, and that helps us before the match with Germany, where I believe we will show our true level. Not yesterday, but in next game with Germany, because this is a real test, and all questions will be answered that day.
I mean, one thing we have to agree on here as well is the young boy Fati. It was his first full start for the national team, and that boy's going to be a right player. He really is. I mean, I had a look at some of the stats for him alone after the game. They were absolutely phenomenal, and putting him up against and Timchuk, for what he provides, he is excellent. He's a great attacking outlet on the right-hand side. And I think we saw with his assist in the Switzerland game with the run he made for the first goal, what a great outlet he's going to be. He's not a fullback, he's a wingback. And that he had a right feel of a day against him there. Some of those runs were incredible. And for my own opinion, I think there was perhaps a tactical mistake for that. And as Andre, you just said, it may be something that the national team need to look at, that they go for against the stronger teams in particular. They go for the three at the back, the three centre-halves, and play the wing-backs. Because I think Mikhailichenko has impressed to a certain extent from an attacking point of view. Over the two games, and it's something that's worth exploring in the future to play the three and further forward with the false nine. It gives us a different dynamic going forward, and as you said, plan B if the plan A isn't going to work, and with the level of players that are on offer at the moment, it does seem that something different is going to be needed when we take on the top teams in the Euros next summer going forward. Roman on Twitter has said, asked a couple of times already, we're looking towards the Euros with the 23-man roster. Let's take the squad over the last two match days of the Nations League. What changes do we think are going to happen before the Euros? What players do we think might come through? I know there's a little bit of fantasy football involved in this as well, a lot of guessing. But what players do we see coming through, maybe breaking through from the under-21s or players coming back from injury? Andre, shall I go to you first on this one?
Yeah, and these days we have a really decent U21 lineup. I don't think I need to mention those names again, but these are Mudryk, Cheberko, Supriaha Buletsa, and Popov, Titashvili. Lunin is probably fits in this team, but I'm not sure. However, all of those guys really deserve a place in the national team, but it's not that spacious, you know. There's only 11 players and 7 substitutions. I would say that Lunin definitely should start on goal. We have a lot of options to replace Konoplyanka, Titashvili, Yaremchuk, but he is not under 21, but he's quite impressive as an inside player, not a not a 9 and not a 10, but in the middle or between flank and center forward position, somewhere there, this his zone. He likes to play there. Apart from that, I would say that Yarmolenko should be given a chance to play a year after in Euros, because he can work in the back. He really comes back for the ball and he fights his way in defense. But he's not doing this occasionally, so he's still better than Konkanka in my opinion. Whom we definitely shouldn't start anymore is Kovalenko. I don't want to be that rough, but I really don't understand this weird obsession of Shevchenko with that player. I mean, he's a youngster and he's quite prospective, but he's older than 21 and 22. And so he's been given a lot of chances and he just doesn't run, doesn't move the ball. That's probably it. A big headache for Shevchenko to replace all the Shakhtar players, as we know that Shakhtar is the base club for the Sbirna. But we'll see. I mean, he should really have a look at under 21 and Ukrainian championship a bit better. I mean, you can say that he only watches a couple of clubs by the way he picks up the lineup. So that's some work to do for him and his foreign training squad.
Okay. Andre, what would you see as changes for the squad?
Yeah, definitely agree with Andre there for the keeper. Lunin, I was quite a fervent backer of Piatov last year during the qualifying campaign, but just these past two matches, seeing what Shevchenko wants to do now, it seems like he's going for a completely different sort of gameplay style. So if we're going to be playing out of the back like that, and we're going to persist with that, then you may as well put Lunin in there, who is better with his feet, that's for certain, and probably better at goalkeeping overall. But we'll see how his year progresses as Real Madrid's second choice keeper. He might get some cup games, maybe a few other matches, say if Courtois gets injured or something. So it'll be good experience for him regards to that. I agree,
Can I just interrupt you there, Andrew, for a second? From a national team perspective, would you like to see Lunin go out on loan for this year?
Well, last year he was at Real Oviedo, so the second tier of Spanish football, well, for the second half, and he got a lot of games in there. He was basically their first choice. I mean, is that a top level to be playing at? Potentially not. So, I mean, I feel maybe one season at Real Madrid where, you know, just to see how it goes, then I feel, why not? And then if it has to happen, he can move elsewhere.
Sorry to take you off track, but yeah. So now back to the national team changes.
Yeah, sure. So I feel that maybe what could start being brought in is maybe changes to the defence. Kvitov had a few couple shaky games, and I know that Shevchenko likes keeping those two together because they play in defence for their club as well, so they've got that sort of connection. However, it might be worth seeing whether Popov or even Bondar could do a job alongside Matvienko, because I feel Matvienko is actually fine. He had a much better game than Kvitov yesterday, and he looked like one of Ukraine's better players despite the scoreline. With the fullbacks, it's pretty obvious that Mykhailichenko will never probably be Ukraine's first choice left back. Mykolenko is just so much better, both attacking and in defence. So that's sort of a no-brainer. He'll be there in reserve if need be. Timchik just probably needs more experience in the European games. So hopefully Dinamo get that. Hopefully they maybe make the Champions League so he can face more consistent opposition to the likes of Fatty and see whether he can cope with that in general. Probably just going back to the Spain game, what Shevchenko probably could have done in terms of switched his tactics up rather than playing the young the young fullbacks again when they're not maybe as defensively sound as some of Ukraine's other players. He could maybe try and adapt his lineup to the opposition that he's playing against rather than playing exactly what he wants. So it probably would have been better to play Karavayev at right back yesterday, even though he's not as fast as Timchik or anything. It probably might have been better to deal with the threat of Fati, and then Sobol on the left, probably a bit more defensively sound and more experienced to be dealing with like Jesus Navas and Dani Olmo. But yeah, I mean, going forward, I think I want to see Supraha be given a chance because he's got a lot of pace and a lot of energy. And I feel that he's the kind of guy that is actually quite good at dribbling and can run over onto those balls and catch them. Junior Moraes proved that he couldn't really do anything against Switzerland. And Marlos starting in that false nine was just pretty nonsensical. It was pretty poor. And literally, it got changed after the 30 minutes anyway, where Yaremchuk got put in the middle, and then for some reason, like the last 15 minutes of the first half, Yaremchuk played on the left and then Marlos played on the right. So it was all just a bit muddled up, bit of a mess. And I feel that probably the best things will be keep Yaremchuk on the right or bring him into the middle. Yaremchuk on the left, because I think he's quite good there and he's good at tracking back as well. And then have Supraha in there or Tankov out on the right.
Thanks. Cheers. Peter, over to you.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with what's been said, but I think one factor that might have a big impact is actually Mirta Luchescu at Dinamo, because if he gets Dinamo playing in a more possession-based kind of system, playing it out from the back, then maybe we will see some of those younger Dinamo players, be it Popo, Sirota, or whoever else it may be. And if they start playing regularly with the ball at the feet, then that could obviously benefit the national team rather than just relying on the players from Shakhtar. Obviously, we saw in the Super Cup how Dinamo basically backed the bus, but you'd anticipate that against lesser sides, there'll be more attack-minded, so that'll be good to see. And yeah, I think there's a bit of loyalty for some of the players that we've mentioned, and maybe they just need to be a bit more ruthless. And then hopefully some people like Tihankov, who's just been mentioned, he can either, first of all, get his move, leave Ukraine playing a higher league, or just get a full season of playing every week without these niggling injuries that he seems to be getting, whether that's because he's trying to work his way out of the club or if he has genuinely got issues. But we saw in the qualifying campaign last time how capable he really is. So if we can get him in that kind of form, he's really got to be starting, I think. But yeah, it would be nice to see some of the under 20 World Cup winners really progressing, but they need to be playing at club level as well. And I know it's nice to say we should watch more clubs in the UPL, but unfortunately it's not the highest level, which is why Shevchenko is leaning on these players who have moved abroad. But the more players that move abroad, the better for the whole, I believe. So Supraha is the one that's having a lot of speculation at the minute. If he was suddenly playing in Serie A, then who knows what he could end up being.
I just want to throw into the pot there, the rumours about Mykolenko that have popped up in the last couple of days as well. Manchester United's name's been linked with him, which I can see he's raised a smile on one or two of your faces there, but hey, where there's a rumour, there's always a story, so we'll watch that one as well. We've touched on the under-21s there. What is going wrong with them? What is going wrong there? I mean, it is like a mounting pot of potential talent, and they seem to have gone backwards over the last 2 years. Andrew, I saw you tweeted a few things about it over the weekend. What do you see as the main problem?
Yeah, so going forward, basically, it's difficult to see, you know, what's going to happen with the under-21s. Will Rotan be sort of kept on after this qualifying campaign or not? I'm not sure. You'd hope that they probably would have a replacement in line. Maybe Petrikov, who won the under-20s, and I think he's gone back down to the under-17s to sort of rebuild that team again for himself up until the under-19s. I think he could do a good job. He knows all the players relatively well, a good majority of them. And they played some good football during that tournament and the Euros before that. So every chance for that happens. But it will just depend on the UAF and their priorities, I guess.
I guess so. Correct me if I'm wrong, did Popov pick up another injury?
It's Burda. Yeah,
sorry, Andrei?
It was Burda. It was another Dynamo Kiev.
He's picking up a history of injuries there as well, if I'm correct. So it's sadly, it may be that he may not reach the peak of his career that would have been hyped for earlier. Peter, what's your take on the problems with the under-21s at the moment? Do you agree with Andrew there, the principal issues?
Yeah, I've not actually managed to watch any of them, really. I tried finding a stream, but I didn't have any luck. So from that perspective, I can't really comment on the performances. But yeah, from the managerial side, it just kind of seems like we're giving a legend a job. And maybe he's just in the end not up to it. I've heard he looks good for Instagram though when he's got his kit on the side of the pitch. So that's always nice to have. But yeah, maybe it's just not working out for him, and rather it happen at the under-21s than at the senior side. As for replacement, I don't know if it'll be another legend rather than giving it back to Petrikov. I'm not sure, did Petrikov go back down to the under-17s to bring them back through again and stick with the generation? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I've read. I believe he's doing now.
So I don't know if they've got that system where they just let people follow through, and then for the under-21 they give it to a bit more of a high-profile name.
Sadly not working this time around, though, is it? And somebody, I forget who it was, I apologise, in Twitterland mentioned about with Stepanenko being injured, and he's now 31, if I believe. Who do we see potentially coming through to replace him? As you know, we've discussed earlier, he has such a pivotal role in a sort of, you know, un-celebritised way within the team, if it's such a word. And with the problems with the under-21s, who do we see stepping up as cover there? Andre, do you any names pop into your head?
One of them would be Sidorchuk from the Dynamo Kiev captain. He went on as a sub yesterday, and he kind of got the job done until some other Ukrainian players were let on the pitch. However, you can tell that in terms of a defensive midfielder, as a pit bull, as a ankle nipper, so to say, Stepanenko is the perfect choice. And his replacement, well, Sidorchuk fits this part. But we never had such an, you know, invisible character in midfield areas, such as Stepanenko, as you said. When he's gone, you notice it straight away. So this is one position to have a headache about for coaching staff. But I would say Sidorchuk would be the one to fit in, probably some.
In the short term. How old is Sidorchuk, by the way, at the moment? Late 20s?
Yeah, I think he's not too far off Stepanenko himself. But yeah, I mean, I think the only sort of player that I can think of from the youngsters, anyway, that's making any sort of name for himself is Maxim Cech. He's currently at Mariupol. He's on loan from Shakhtar. And he looked quite good when I saw him. Me and Peter saw him play for Shakhtar under-19s against Man City a couple of years ago. And he looked sort of promising. So I guess we'll just need to see his development. But it seems like he's not starting for the under-21s. He's just sort of a bench player. So, it'll be up to that coaching team to see whether they can actually do anything with that.
Any other names pop into your head, Peter? Or do you agree with the boys?
Not really, but I think Mitro Ivani Senior got a call up last time, didn't he? So it'd be interesting if he manages to develop at all. But there's no standout candidates. I mean, in that position in the past, we've had the likes of Andriy Husin and Timo Struff, and then they've all owned it. And then obviously Stepanenko owns it at the minute. So we need that next kind of leader to creep up on us. But he has. There was always a kind of replacement for those names I've just mentioned waiting in the wings, and right now we're kind of not seeing it. That said, Stepanenko is 31, but he could still have a good 3 or 4 years in that position, so there's still time.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. A couple of people, a number of people have said, obviously we've touched like quite in depth on the Pyatov, Lunin debate already, but I think as most people will agree, everyone here feels Lunin deserves a chance. Gents, it's your last chance to shout out. If you think Pyatov deserves to keep the starter spot over Lunin going into the October games, well, do you feel he should stay in the squad, you know, with his experience to help bring Lunin through? Peter, I see you're nodding your head in agreement there.
Yeah, I think there's definitely value in his experience in the squad. He's obviously a leader. He's both captain at Shakhtar and at Zvezda. So, yeah, he'll definitely be in the squad, assuming he's still playing for Shakhtar regularly as well. That's my only concern with Lunin, is just regular football. Like I mentioned before, there's the potential of the friendly against France in October. I think we'll definitely see a change in man between the sticks for that one. But like we said, Shevchenko's been quite loyal at times, so maybe he will just stick with Pyatov.
It sounds, I'm listening to you here, it feels like Man City about 3-4 years ago, where you had Joe Hart, who was this fantastic shot stopper between the sticks. Guardiola comes in and says, right, I need a keeper who can kick a ball. And all of a sudden, Joe Hart's kicked out of the club, never to be seen again. And you know, they had Claudio Bravo in, it was an absolute disaster, and before they...
But again, and like with Pyatov, he just seems to stick around. We've had the same issue for as long as he's been a senior keeper at Shakhtar and for Zvezda, and he keeps sticking around. Whoever comes in to replace him just is even worse, so...
fair comment there, definitely. Sitashvili, and I hope I got his name right. I apologise to anyone who's offended with my awful pronunciation. Dennis, out in Twitterland, you were saying about, is there an extra urgency with him? Is it worth, like you mentioned there, the France game coming up in October, getting capped up quickly, even if he's not quite ready for the under-21s, for the national team? Is the potential so strong that we can't afford to risk losing him to Israel or Georgia? I'll go to Andre. As a devout Dynamo Kiev follower, what's your opinion on it?
Well, as I understand the question, we need to keep Titashvili in Ukraine side so he wouldn't be a Georgian side, right?
Yeah, or the Israeli side, which is, I believe he's eligible for both the national teams.
Yeah, well, I mean, he definitely should be in the roster for next matches of national team, I mean, the first national team. He should be used as a sub, I would say. If he plays in the left flank, then he's a replacement for... Konoplyanka, but as we discussed previously, it's probably better to use Yaremchuk as inside and Yarmolenko on the other flank, where you can also use Marlos and Sitashvili. So there are quite plenty of options, but answering your question, yes, he should be in the lineup as a sub at first. We cannot afford to ignore him.
Definitely. Andrew, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the urgency.
You can tell him no if you don't agree with him.
No, I mean, I would obviously like to have him in there for certain, because you just don't know how big he could get. I mean, he had a very good World Cup at the under-20 level, and he impressed there, and he's impressed for Dynamo Kyiv. It's just whether he's going to actually fulfill that potential, but it's the risk that he might have to take, similar to how Fomenko brought on Zinchenko against Spain 5 years ago. What, 5 years ago, I think, for like the final 2 minutes when Ukraine were actually chasing a 1-0 loss. Let's just hope Shevchenko doesn't do it in such dramatic circumstances. But you know, it would be good to have him in there just as a, you know, a backup, or just see what the future could bring.
Definitely, definitely. Right. Well, before we move on tonight, we've got one final, slightly lighter tone of question regarding the kit supplier for Euro 2021. Are we happy with Joma? Will Joma be the kit supplier? If they are we sure they will get new ones for Euro 21? If not, who would we like to see as a replacement?
I think this is a good one. I think it's a good one for Pete to answer, because he's been trying to get the new Joma kit. How are your struggles?
Yeah, we're nowhere near it at the minute, so I'm still working on getting it, because there's no suppliers in England just yet. But in general, yeah, they're a bit bland, the kits. They're not the best. The one good kit they had, the white one, we only played in it once, and that's gone, and we'll never see that again. I don't know, just looking at some of the kit releases in the last week or so, is it Kherson who've come out with a really, really out there kind of kit? And it's, I can't remember who the manufacturer is, but something wacky like that would work for me. Bring back striped, blue and yellow stripes, like we had in, I think, 1996 for one game. Something different.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Andre, anything you want to add in?
I would love to see Macron, Kappa. Who do we have? Le Coq Sportif. I don't know. Those kind of authentic, independent brands on the likes of the Ukrainian national team. But I have to say that I've been checking out the kits of other European teams from the last week, and they are absolutely marvelous. They pretty much, each team has a magnificent kit. I mean Portugal, England, Nike, Adidas, once again Macron, all doing their bit, and it's a wonderful thing to see. I mean, lockdown really worked out well for those manufacturers. So, but I'm not sure. I really don't believe that we're gonna change Homa or Joma just because it's comfortable for UAF. And they can afford to put their own Vyshyvanka embroidery on the kind of print on the kit. So it's their trademark of this UAF, because we never had it before. We had a magnificent thing from Adidas at Euro 2012, which everyone remembers as a classic. But I think they decided to change that, and they just provided their own kind of concept, and Joma agreed to that, and that's what we're going to see next year, I'm pretty sure.
So, I've just checked as well, the Crystal Kherson shirt that I was talking about is actually made by Joma, so I'm all for Joma too.
fantastic. All right, well, that's a wrap for the national team. We did promise a national team special tonight for everybody. But we do have two European games coming up before we're scheduled to record our next episode in 2 weeks' time. We have Dynamo up against AZ, Alkmaar from Holland, and Kolos are making their debut in European football, down in Greece against Aris, which, I apologise, everybody. One final question about the national team for our guests tonight. And this is one that I did want to dive into, so please forgive me on this. In October, we've got games against Germany and Spain coming up, if I am not mistaken. Please correct me if I'm wrong before I dig myself further into a hole.
And an expected friendly against France in that same week.
It's going to be a busy week. We'll have to get an extra recording session in. Do we think spectators are going to be back in the stadium by then? And as you mentioned earlier, Andrew, what is the impact for the Ukrainian team in particular playing home games without spectators, and in fact the away games as we saw? Do we think the team will perform better in these big matches with more supporters in the stadium? I'll go to you first of all with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it actually has quite a big impact, because especially because I went to all of the 2019 qualifier matches, and I've seen how sort of impactful the travelling support / the home support has been for the Ukrainian national team. Like, they love doing a lot of fan engagement. The sort of this new UAF initiative, where they're getting, like, before the Switzerland game, the recording of the anthem was just a crowd recording being played, no music or anything, but it's just like hardcore raw sort of passion and emotion, and sort of that's what they've been trying to play off against. And I feel that especially yesterday, it just felt like obviously there's less intensity on you and maybe less pressure as well, especially even when you're performing worse, to not step your game up a bit, and maybe that sort of forces a drop in the actual performance. So I feel maybe eventually once the fans do come back, it will have a sort of a positive impact on the Ukraine national side. Whether that will be in October, I feel probably too soon to call, especially of what Ukraine's done over the past month with closing its borders. I mean, even if it opened up in other European countries, I feel UEFA protocol at the moment, they're being very cautious. They're letting, you know, the likes of, I think the UEFA are letting the likes of Perestroika matches have a few spectators and other things like that. But I don't know whether to such an extent of a level as national team or even European matches, whether that will come to a throw.
Mm-hmm. Peter, I know you go to a lot of national team matches as well. Do you agree with Andrew there?
Yeah, absolutely. But I did think initially that given the amount of games in recent years that Ukraine have been forced to play behind closed doors because of some of the behaviour of the fans, I thought it might be a bit of an advantage to start with. But then everyone's in the same boat now, so it's kind of it's just a level playing field for everyone. So it works both ways. Obviously, everybody wants to have the crowd, but at the same time, do we want to be going to Germany facing a hostile crowd? Swings and roundabout. And at the end of the day, it's the same for both teams. So what impact it actually has at the end of the day, I'm not sure if it's that big. And regarding going back to games, hopefully here in England, that weekend will be the first one that we're allowed to attend to. And obviously UEFA are doing a trial in the Super Cup as well. So there might be some limited capacity. I think that maybe the November games might be more realistic, but yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I've seen the Druha Liga in particular, there seems to be quite open towards spectators. And I, going back to Crystal Kherson, they were selling tickets quite openly for their game at the weekend, I saw. So that's just why I wanted to throw that one out there. But back to European football, the Kolos game and the Dynamo game. How do we see those two games going? I believe it is a week on Wednesday and a week on Thursday, or a week on Tuesday. I never quite know with the Champions League when we're up. Andre, how do you see those two matches going?
I'm really excited to see the Dynamo AZ match in the qualifiers as they played before. And that was right the season when my team from North Kiev beat Dynamo in their own ground, right before the match against AZ Alkmaar. And that's something to remember. But it's still quite the same if we talk about the teams, because Aze is still a lower class team than Dynamo, whatever Dynamo tries to pull off with their managers and players. But they should win. They should get points for Ukraine, and they should proceed in the group stage without a doubt.
Without a doubt. He's put yeah. on live recordings there, ladies and gentlemen. Peter, do you agree with Andre's assertion? Without a doubt, must be in the group stage.
Well, given, is it now 3 or 4 years since they've been in the group stage? I think it's the record since the group stages have been a thing. So it's been a long time, and the duo performance. And again, that factor, the fans might not be happy, but Lucescu has the experience. We saw over one game again in the Super Cup, he can pull it off tactically. So I'd definitely make them favourites. Whether I'm as confident as Andre, I don't know about that, but I'd say, yeah, I think they should definitely get through this round, and then we'll take it one game at a time, especially with it being a one-off tie at home.
Okay, Andre, do you have the same optimism? Or realism, should we say?
Well, judging from the Super Cup, you could have some sort of positives taken from that could go into this one. However, I feel that AZ might be getting slightly underestimated here, seeing as they actually finished level on points with Ajax in the Eredivisie last season. And then I think it just got cancelled and Ajax won it on either goal difference or points per game or something like that. And so they were sort of quite harshly done by there. And I think they beat Ajax twice in the season anyway. So, and we know how Dynamo performed against Ajax 2 years ago, awfully. So I feel it needs to be taken with caution, but like Petros said, actually, over one leg at home, that's an advantage in itself. Because, and if actually even better side who are more used to playing behind closed doors than the Ukraine national team's Dynamo Kyiv, so they've definitely got that in their favour. We'll just see how it goes. I mean, AZ I think beat Mariupol last year like 4-0 or something. Obviously, gulf in class between Mariupol and Dynamo, but if they can't beat AZ, basically, they don't deserve to be in the Champions League group stages anyway. So that's basically where it comes down to.
And then up next, if they do get through AZ, I believe it's Genk or Rapid Vienna. And
Ghent. Yeah, so we'll see good old Yaremchuk and Plasdun and Bezos come to town should they get past their own team.
The Battle of Ukraine for a place in the group stages there. And Kolos is going to be a baptism of fire for them. Fortunately, not as realistic as it can be down in Thessalonica on a week on Thursday against Aris, which is known for some of its most hostile welcomes in European football. Do Kolos have a chance at all? Peter?
I mean, who honestly expected them to be in European competition this season? They've surprised everyone. So why not? Again, it's just one game. So who knows? They might get a lucky penalty in the first minute, get the penalty, score the goal and win 4-0. Who knows?
Or are we going to see the return of the old boy? If he's registered in time for the Europa League, is he going to bash one in and take his team to glory there? Wouldn't that be a story for the headline makers?
Yeah, absolutely. And then he'll go on and claim the UPL all-time record top goal scorer as well.
Actually, I was asked to write a piece for a Greek website recently, and I did make a point of dropping that one in as well. Andrew, do you agree there, Peter? Hopefully they can scrape a goal, but grab a goal and cling on for a shock. victory?
Yeah, I mean, it's got one of those typical potentially 1-0 1-0 score lines written all over it. I've read a bit about Aris. I think they didn't have the best of seasons last year themselves. I mean, I think they finished fifth or something, and this is only their like second appearance in the Europa League at all in like the past decade, or well, for a long time. So they're just probably as inexperienced as Kolos are. Kolos have brought in a couple of decent experienced players there, and they've got quite a good setup going on as well. I mean, they took Shakhtar and Dinamo to very close games last season, even beat Dinamo Kyiv. I don't even know whether that's actually a good test of anything, but you can use that as you wish. I feel that they've probably got the more favourable draw if they get through as well against Osijek. I think that they're an all right Croatian side. But yeah, so it'll be a day out. I feel the only sort of negative is that Kolos Kovalivka Stadium, which opened on the weekend last week, actually might not be able to see any European football in terms of qualifiers, just because of how the draws run out. But hopefully it does. Hopefully they get to the playoffs and we see that.
I just want to add there as well, in the sort of optimism towards Kolos, that the Greek league hasn't started yet. Aris's first game will be on Friday night against one of the lower table, bottom half table teams, Lamia, at home. And yeah, Aris were in the second division as recently as 2-3 years ago when they bounced back. So they haven't been doing as well recently. Certainly not as strong as AZ anyway. Andre, what do you make? We saw a couple of the Dinamo under 21 boys have gone to Kolos, correct, if I'm correct, on loan. Good signings for Kolos. Do you reckon they could have an impact there?
Well, I'm not that familiar with the under 29 Dinamo players as I might seem from previous remarks.
But I think
That those guys will help Kolos, because Isayenko scored 5 goals recently in the youth squad against Olympic, if it tells you anything. And Kucharuk should be given a chance for sure, although they have Olenets, who was magnificent against Shakhtar. And yet again, at least that we know that the guy's going to have a nice vacation in sunny Greece.
Definitely, definitely. They're going to have a nice trip down there no matter what. And we can only hope that they pull off something. Before we finish tonight, one last thing. I don't know, gents, if anyone can explain the situation for Ukraine going into this season with the coefficients in particular. Where are we with that, and what could be the implication if Dinamo, for example, don't get through against AZ? What's the sort of worst case there? Does anybody know what could happen to European places?
Is it the introduction of the Europa League to the conference?
Yeah, the Europa Conference and extra places in the Champions League, or will they lose a place in the Champions League?
I think as it stands, I think we're 12th in the coefficients at the start of the season. So we'll keep the 2 spaces in the Champions League. But if we drop any more, then if we have another bad season, then from the end of next season, we'll be really struggling.
Really, to keep the runners-up spot. So it is very important. And I think we should add here as well that the Europa League teams, every victory that they do pick up this season will add to the coefficient points. And it is very tight. I think we saw Shakhtar going one round further last year, kept Ukraine up in 9th or 10th place going into this season, whereas they could have finished 12th if they hadn't got through against Basel, for example. Anyway, gents, it's been a pleasure as always tonight. I've really enjoyed it. I hope you have as well. Peter, it's been great to have you here this evening. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to go about it?
Yeah, for me, it's probably on Twitter if you want to use the Donetsk Way hashtag. So it's at Donetsk Way 2012. Probably not as much fun following myself because I'll just ramble about politics. So I'll stick with Donetsk Way for Ukrainian football.
Where did the name Donetsk Way come from, by the way?
That was Euro 2012. We did a road trip from here in sunny Yorkshire to Donetsk, obviously, because Ukraine played two of the games there. So, we bought our car, christened the Victoria after Viktor Leonenko, drove across Europe, had a great time a month in Ukraine, enjoying the festivities of Euro 2012. Donetsk Way was born. The Viktor Leonenko Hall of Fame came in excitement ahead of the tournament, and we've just kind of carried on since then.
Fantastic. And Andre, if people want to get in touch with you, just to remind them.
Instagram, Ray Vic, if you want to follow more news about Obolon, it's Obolon Casual.
And we just want to wish you good luck with your delayed start to the season. Hopefully this weekend, Obolon will finally get onto the pitch with your bye in the cup and the Veres game being postponed. So good luck there. And Andrew, big thank you, first of all, for jetting back from Madrid as quickly as you have. but also, if people want to get in touch with you.
Yeah, at Sundonsk.
Okay. And of course, I'm Adam at Ukrafot24. You can get me on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and pretty much everywhere else where I stalk people online. And that's it for tonight, everybody. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a league review, and we'll have a touch on the European competitions as well. And we look forward to seeing everybody back then in 2 weeks' time. This is Ukrafot24 for Shoot the Defence podcast. Thank you, and bye.